You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
Over the past few years, many more Canadians have become aware of the injustices inflicted on the Palestinian people. Meanwhile, Canadian government policy, rooted in part in evangelical Christian doctrines, continues its unquestioning support for Israeli government repression. But there are other religious ideas among Christians than those of Harper and Kenny. Most importantly, there are the ideas of Palestinian Christians. To explore those ideas, we've contacted Chris Ferguson. He is a minister of the United Church, has worked with the World Council of Churches, both in Jerusalem and as their representative on Palestine at the United Nations. Chris Ferguson currently is traveling across Canada precisely to make better known the views of Palestinian Christians, and we reached him this morning in Victoria. Good morning, Chris, and welcome to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Thank you very much.
To begin with, how would you characterize relations between Christian Palestinians and Muslim Palestinians?
I mean, the characteristic has always been one of peaceful and good coexistence within tensions. In the Ottoman period, of course, Christians were a protected community, and that has a negative and positive connotation. But today, that I think that there is a very strong sense that Christians, whether they're Palestinians, whether they're Christian or Muslim, share a common thread and a common source of suffering, which is the occupation. And I think there are tensions between Christians and Muslims, but the predominant point is not those tensions, but really a common sense of purpose to build a free and strong Palestinian society.
In 2009, Christian Palestinians, various denominations working together, created a document. It's titled Kairos Palestine Document. Before discussing the content of the document itself, could you give us an explanation of the meaning of the word Kairos in this?
Right, Kairos is a Greek word, and in its earlier biblical Greek connotation, it really speaks to the idea of the moment in time where it's seen theologically as God being especially present. It's the significant moment, the moment that is ripe for action, because it's a moment that is opportune to confront a crisis or a situation, a historical turning point.
So in that notion of a historical turning point, what are the key sort of ideas that come out of this document?
I mean, basically this document sees itself as a cry of hope in a situation is become absolutely untenable and insufferable, that it has reached a dead end. So that for all the talk of the peace processes and the long processes following the Oslo Peace Accord, they're basically saying, using a biblical quote, you know, they've treated the wounds of my people lightly, saying peace, peace when there is no peace. The reality today means they need to act to address the reality of the occupation, the dispossession of Palestinians of their land, and the suffering of their people. And what instead is a kind of international indifference, or a framing of the situation as if this was a situation of war against terror, rather than the true situation of an ongoing military occupation that is crossing the lives and robbing the freedom of Palestinians. So they felt they need to break the silence and say, we don't see an end to this situation, but need to speak out and name the truth and reality as it is, and to bring a Christian voice to that they themselves repent for having been silent too long about the actual root cause of the sufferings that the Palestinians are facing.
And from a theological perspective, which is the grounding of the document, how did they see occupation?
They rather dramatically declare the occupation, the military occupation of the lands occupied since 1967, as a sin against God and humanity. And the language of sin against God comes from their fundamental understanding that this is a structure of injustice that destroys human life, and with all humanity being made in the image of God, this becomes not only a sin for that reason, but further a sin because theological principles are used to justify and defend the oppression that's inflicted on a people. The sin against the people are clear because it is destroying human life and robbing people of their freedom, but it is worse and exacerbated because religious principles are used to justify that suffering.
And religion plays a role, certainly, in some people's conception of Judaism, that they claim through biblical sources that they have an exclusive right to the land. What does this document say in terms of their interpretation of the Bible about claims to the land?
This document lifts up the idea that which is a Christian idea shared but also shared by Jews, an alternate to the one you expressed, that says that the earth is the Lord and the fullness thereof. That understanding land not to be something that can be possessed, but a permanent gift from God, and that gift, in the sense of the land that we're talking about, is seen as having a special universal vocation. That the special gift of the land, what makes the land holy in that sense, is the idea that this land that is land of conflict, actually, not only does it there for all peoples, it is to specially be the place where out of the conflict can emerge an image of justice and peace and people living together and sharing the land. So the land can't be exclusively possessed by anybody, and in fact has the role of calling the world, not just the people of that land, to peace and reconciliation.
Love is a central concept of Christian theology. Resistance is often seen as a secular notion. Does this document bring those two together from a theological perspective?
It does. It actually talks about three words, and you're picking on one of them. One is faith, hope, and love. And when they get to the centrality of love in the Christian faith, they talk about that commandment, not only to love God and love the neighbor, but to love enemies, and clearly say that within the commandment of love, the key to love in a situation of injustice is to resist evil. You love your neighbor by resisting the root cause that causes pain and destruction. So they see that the commandment of love calls the obligation, not just the option or the right, but the obligation to resist evil, including and especially structural evil, the systems and the mechanisms that hurt and destroy. In that idea, resistance is an imperative, but only resistance based on the logic of love. So their particular call is to all Palestinians in the context to resist the evil of the occupation, to invite Israelis to join them in the resisting of this evil, and to say it must be done only under the logic of love, in other words, a non-violent resistance.
Would that include things like campaigns which have been advanced by some Palestinians of boycott, divestment, and sanctions similar to those employed in the opposition to apartheid in South Africa?
Yes, they divide that into two parts. One is for Palestinians themselves. They absolutely say that they see that the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement is an expression of an effective, nonviolent resistance to end the occupation, but they call for it particularly to be embraced free of revenge, free of hate, free of any desire to punish, but rather as a very specific form of ending a specific evil. And so they definitely embrace that as an option and are calling people in the context to consider it. And then also ask similarly to people outside of Palestine to consider if BDS, the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, is not something that we all could be called to do to and the occupation. But their word to us is slightly different, saying we're not here to prescribe to you. If you don't choose that nonviolent means, still we're asking you to break the silence and the lethargy of the international community, the indifference, and choose an active way of resisting evil that is nonviolent, that builds towards the reconciliation and peace with justice that the situation requires. So if not boycotts, what will you do?
You're bringing these ideas especially to Christian communities in Canada. What challenges do they pose to Christian communities here?
One of the very difficult challenges is for people to hear the focus on the issue of the occupation as the understanding of the reality that generates violence. That most people have heard a totally different story and have come to understand that the story from the point of view that's distributed in the media and others as a situation of Israel being in legitimate self-defense against terrorism, and that all these things that seem difficult are basically justified as acts of self-defense. And it's hard for people to actually hear this different word and to put the word of occupation in the first place. The second thing is that the Canadian Christian community, particularly of the church that I belong to and others, have struggled mightily to understand Christian guilt and Christian responsibility for Christian anti-Semitism, and particularly the kind of theological teachings that justified or at least deeply fueled and made possible the Holocaust and other systematic destruction of Jewish peoples. And in that light, it becomes a challenge for people to separate out the notion of the modern state of Israel with its responsibilities under international law and notions that to criticize Israel might in fact be a betrayal of the Jewish people or entering into a kind of anti-Semitism itself. So to find a space where the respect and love and honoring of the integrity of the Jewish people is held up at the same time that a clear application of international law and human rights standards to end an illegal situation of suffering for the Palestinians becomes an important act for people to sort out the way that certain ideas have become fused and to separate out what is a clear commitment to combat anti-Semitism, but at the same time finding our voice to criticize the violations of international law and the human rights abuses that are present in the illegal occupation of Palestinian territories.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this morning, Chris, and bringing these ideas to our listeners. And I'll give information about an upcoming meeting in Vancouver where people can hear more and participate in discussion about it. Thank you again.
Okay, thank you very much.
For those in the Lower Mainland, this Wednesday evening, May 4th at 7:30 p.m., Chris Ferguson and Susan Ferguson, who have been together working for justice in Palestine, along with Nermeen Namari. She's a Jerusalem-born Palestinian now living in Vancouver. The three of them will be speaking at St. Andrew's United Church in North Vancouver. That's May 4th, Wednesday, 7:30. And the address of that church is 10-1044 St. George's Avenue. It's just south of the Lionsgate Hospital near East 11th Street.